Hello, this is your host, Jigme Kelting, and welcome to the Jigme Kelting Show, a podcast where I sit down to speak with singer-songwriters, musicians, sports personalities, actors, radio broadcasters, and a slew of many other professionals from a broad range of fields. In this news conversation, Phil Crosby Jr., a jazz performing artist, multi-instrumentalist, band leader, and grandson of late iconic entertainer, television producer, Academy Award winner, radio personality, and businessman Bing Crosby talks about his paternal grandfather, identity as an artist, importance of originality, battle with imposter syndrome, whether he feels content in life, and more, as well as favorite place he's traveled to. And now, with that being said, I hope you enjoyed the episode. Hello, Phil. How are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm good, thank you. And I love your description of my grandfather. Not everybody really includes that he was a television producer and a businessman, but he really was very influential in certain aspects of the business world, including founding companies in what became known as Silicon Valley and the Ampex industry and reel-to-reel magnetic tape recording technology. But
Absolutely.
I'm having a great
Well,
day. How are you?
I'm having a great day to be able to sit down with you and talk with you all about being in his life, and also about your music and your career overall, and being able to, I guess, explore sort of the behind the scenes of what your career is all about, and to learn more about your grandfather's life. And I know I don't know how to really phrase this question, but like, if you don't mind me asking, I guess, like, while doing some research on sort of your grandfather and yourself, it sort of became, little did I know about that, like, I guess you didn't really get to meet your grandfather, in life, right? I mean, is that
That's
accurate, I
correct.
guess?
Now, I was a little baby when I was about 3 years old when he passed. Well, I was a little older than that, but so I wouldn't have probably remembered anyway. But no, it's true. I came late into the family. I'm the youngest legitimate grandchild of my grandparents, which was Bing's, my grandmother was Bing's first wife. Basically, not that it matters, legitimate, illegitimate, whatever, but that I came along at the end of a long, time of where my father and my uncles had wives and ex-wives, and each had, like, these are Hollywood, very common things out here. Like, people get married, and a lot of celebrities you find out, like Zsa Zsa Gabor, had five husbands or something in their life. It's something that's maybe more unique to La La Land, as we call it. But yeah, so by the time I was born, there was a lot, it was difficult for, there was a lot of distance between the great patriarch, my grandfather, and the bit of a sloppy kind of thing that the families of the his sons started. So yeah, my parents divorced. They actually, my parents married, divorced, remarried, and divorced again, all before I was 3.5 years old. So it was kind of like a odd kind of thing to come from. And growing up, I would love to be able to tell people I bounced on my grandfather's knee at Christmas and heard him sing White Christmas in my ear. But that just didn't really happen for most of my generation, my cousins, my half brothers and sisters, of which there are a few. Each and all of us seem to have a lot of half siblings, but that's not so abnormal. I know, I mean, a lot of people who have half brothers and sisters, and sometimes they wish they were closer to them. But yeah, that's been one of the challenges, actually, when I decided to be a singer, was because people make a big deal out of this celebrity, and it comes with a little bit of baggage.
Course. And something that, like, really stuck out to me while, I guess, listening to some of your interviews that you've done over the years, and something that really stuck out was, you mentioned how you didn't really, I guess, you didn't really listen or grow up like most of the previous generations did. Like, when you grow up with, I guess, when your grandfather's Bing Crosby, and people assume that, and people know that, I guess, they assume that you've listened to Bing Crosby's music, and you've listened to all these older generations' music of back in those days, whatever. But you didn't really grow up on those things like the many of us did. Not like the Perry Como's or Bing Crosby, but you do listen to his music, not as, I guess, often as people would expect it, but you do listen to it from time to time. Would that be accurate?
Well, Well, the change really came when I was 30 years old and I decided to investigate, research this genre because I decided that I was going to explore being a performer in that genre. But of course, when you're a child, you don't have a lot of musical taste. Most kids, I can remember listening to, I saw my grandfather's films, like the Road pictures, but the music didn't really jump out. And, again, this is an entirely different generation. That's not even my parents. This is my grandparents' generation of music, So as a child, I never, I mean, of course, I loved Christmas songs. I loved my grandfather's voice in singing White Christmas and the other Christmas greats. But, no one, and I kind of wish someone had, but nobody really sat me down and said, let's explore all of your grandfather's oeuvre, like all of his recordings from his early work to his later work. Let's look at his films. It just wasn't really thought of for some reason. So it took me, and then of course, in my teenage years, these are the 1980s, everybody's listening to new wave, British new wave and stuff. And I'm getting in, I thought I was getting being very vintage by getting into 70s and 60s rock, so or I was listening to blues, old blues and folk music. And I did get into a little bit into like Louis Armstrong and Billie Holiday, but that's because they were very bluesy and there was that rootsy kind of quality that I was looking for as a young, edgy kind of. So getting into my grandfather's music at that time hadn't really become occurred to me either. But what was so fantastic was when I finally did, I realized, wow, you don't get as rootsy and hip at the same time and high quality vocals. Big Crosby's. Oh, so one moment, someone tried to call me. Bing Crosby's work is just it can be like a hole you fall in. I mean, there's a lot of amazing Bing Crosby fans that they don't believe that anyone compares. Even as great as Sinatra is, great as Nat King Cole. You find out the more you listen to Bing Crosby, the more you're like, wow, he sounded so amazing and so effortlessly, So it's as a singer actually, and I came to find it was like a journey coming to terms with my family and my legacy, and at the same time as discovering what an incredible education for a singer, not just jazz music and crooning or whatever, but really American popular song and Bing Crosby.
For sure. And I guess, but also the interesting part of, I guess, your life was sort of when you got to, I guess, hear all the stories about your grandfather and all the things he did in his life. And yeah, he was a television producer, he was an Academy Award winner and whatnot. But I mean, listening to his music, I guess not as often as people expected, but like still listening to his music sort of gave you that head start in terms of the musical career, right? I mean, that's got to be something that you really got motivated by.
Yes, again, I was kind of a shy kid, and it didn't really occur to me until some friends. I never even sang until after high school, and some friends that were they were in the marching band. They were like band geeks, but they were my buds because I was part of the outcasts and not the one part of the cool kids. But they were also got into jazz band while they were still in high school, so they were really accomplished musicians, and they wanted to do a rock band, and I said, well, I play a little bit of blues harmonica, but I never really thought about singing. But of course, like many people, deep inside of us, whether we're in the driving in the car or in the shower, we're singing. We want to we vicariously through our heroes sometimes. So yeah, I think I had secret dreams of singing, and of course I'm sure my grandfather's voice and legacy guided me, even if it was sometimes subconsciously.
Right. And I guess for you when you were, I guess, growing older, you sort of were a rock and roll kind of guy. Like I mentioned before, like you didn't really listen or grow up like a lot of the previous generations did with your grandfather and the Perry Como's and the Frank Sinatras and whatnot. But I mean, you did like sort of the approach of the vocals of, you know, the rock space and the blues, and which really more comes from the Broadway stage, which you mentioned, and which again comes from the other classical music, music and opera and stuff like that. I mean, what was it about, I guess, that rock and roll sort of aspect of your life that really captivated you, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, not at all. Well, I think I've always had a little bit of a rebel streak. So I like the anti-establishment of rock and roll. And of course I've grown up a bit since then. But so I think music in the world in the United States changed a lot from the 1950s to the 1960s. Everything before Elvis and the Beatles and rock and roll and the blues renaissance, really was dominated by these singers like Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra and Bing Crosby and the female amazing female vocalists, like Peggy Lee and Dinah Shore and all these people. And it was a very stylistically, like, it was its own kind of thing where, yes, Broadway songs became jazz standards, and the popular songbook, was this thing, and many singers would throw back to these 1920s and 30s songs and bring them back in the 40s and 50s, and there was a hip kind of, jazzy, era where Mel Torme was doing like "I'm Coming Home, Baby," but a lot changed with the hippies when suddenly this past, ethnocentric, white patriarchy, whatever you want to let people call it nowadays, was something that suddenly was very unpopular. And I guess I was on that bandwagon in the sense that, yes, I didn't grow up with this music in my ears like someone before my generation might. They were growing up, and even the Beatles were huge Bing Crosby fans. They listened, he was a hero to them, and they just loved the fact when he recorded one of their songs, and they're quoted even as saying, "Please, please me," was like kind of inspired by Bing Crosby's "Please." And so they, but they were part of that generation where that music was being listened to in the home and the radio all the time, and that form of singing. Whereas the rock and roll type of singing was, quite different, and based more in Mississippi Delta blues kind of thing. So yeah, I think that appealed to me, and it was something that I actually had to. It's something that's influenced me and made me a unique vocalist in that my influences are a little bit more varied than someone who has really just come up as a crooner or a Broadway, inspired singer or something like that. But yeah, it's I think I was someone who wanted to also be his own person, and it didn't really always feel like I wanted people to think of me as the grandson of a famous person, but I wanted to be my own person. So all those kind of things in my 20s were very important, and colored, my interests very much.
Of course, and you know something that really also resonated there when what you were saying there was, you know, also I guess as of like speaking about sort of like identifying yourself like musically, speaking, you sort of identified yourself as sort of this American songbook interpreter, you the jazz vocalist, multi-instrumentalist, and jazz swing and big band leader. But you also like to headline music events and festivals for dancers and lovers of vintage life and old Hollywood cinema, as well as of course the fans of your grandfather and the iconic Hollywood film star and Academy Award winning actor, and the legendary singer he was. I guess what is so important about sort of being clear on that identity point of view, in terms of your artistry, I guess.
Well, honestly, like, I've never been as focused a person as like into original singer songwriter kind of thing. I love that era of music. I play some guitar. I listen to a lot of, great singer songwriters, and I understand the importance of originality. But I feel like when I kind of fell into following in my grandfather's footsteps, in the sense of being part of this history of music and singing songs written by people like Hoagy Carmichael and George and Ira Gershwin and Cole Porter, and I that is what led me to be involved in things like swing dancing events, vintage fashion aficionados. And it was a, you know, I knew as an entertainer, you need the support of people that are, you know, want to come and see you. And, you know, my grandfather's fans were rapidly aging and, you know, maybe passing. I mean, obviously, he's been gone a long time. So anyone that remembers when he was alive is may no longer be with us. But and honestly, some of the older fans were harder to please. They wanted to hear a carbon copy of my grandfather sometimes, and I couldn't be that. So it was very exciting to have people that were sometimes young, fit, active, wanting to go out and dance and be a part of a social scene. And that's like that's an incredible resource for an entertainer, you know. And I did hope. Now I'm not the swing band, you know, jazz kind of guy. You know, a lot of these great swing bands are musician led, and I am a musician, but I'm not a jazz musician level musician. I play guitar, I play the ukulele, I play the harmonica, I play some drums, and I'm not even really a professional dancer. But we share this love of the music, and I am really passionate about the music and the songwriting and the singing, the crooning. And so we have that in common. So I love to do these events, and I'm good in front of a microphone. So if they need a host, I'm happy to be an MC, and happen to sing pretty good too.
Certainly, and you know, something that you mentioned there, and I really want to point this out as well, that you talked about sort of when people see you live, I guess, and they're expecting those I guess that carbon copy like you mentioned about of your grandfather, and hoping that that you would sound like him, or I guess as close to him. I guess my question to you would be, when that happens, what do you do to temper those expectations, I guess?
Well, it's been challenging, and I won't lie to you. There's been times where it has made me a bit sad when I come off a stage, and instead of, you know, sometimes what you want as an entertainer, you want people to clap and just keep clapping, or, you know, or just say, you know, I had a great time, you did a great job, you know. But a lot of people want to, and even with me, they want to help. They say, oh, God, I loved it, but, you know, you need a little of this, you need a little of that. And older people sometimes will just come out and say, well, you don't sound much like, you know. And of course, my intention was not to sound like him. But of course, you know, especially if I'm going to do something like a Christmas show and sing White Christmas, it's nice to, you know, get close enough so that people hear him in you. But you know, what I learned was this is how I got around. I, you know, when I started, because part of the reason I express how I didn't have the same sensibilities that someone that grows up immersed in the music, I had to learn how to handle this material and how it's different, you know, from you know, a song the way Bob Dylan sings, or you know, Robert Plant, or you know, anybody. It's very different sensibilities. So it took time, and what I found was when I put the time in and I didn't give up and I kept on improving, I reached a level so that instead of being unfavorably compared to my grandfather, I was favorably compared to my grandfather. But then, because then people would say, you know what, you don't sound just like him, but you sound great and you have your own sound. And that's, as a jazz artist, that's what you want anyway. You really don't want, you want, whether you're a musician or a singer, you want to be known for your sound, and you need a unique sound that separates you from everyone else. And that's why the jazz standards are fascinating, because you're not writing a song. Most cases, so there are some singers that do that is fits you like a glove, because it's your creation for your voice. What you're doing, you are closer to a Broadway singer or an opera singer in that sense. You are handling some test tried and tested age-old material, whether it's Mozart or Cole Porter, and you are doing it in such a way that you make it your own. And that is like the, that's what separates the beginners from the advanced, you know, once you can reach that state. So in a way, it actually pushed me, and it made me more aware that I had to become a better vocalist, because I was going to be compared to one of the greatest of all time, no matter what I did.
And it's so important that you say that, because I guess for you, when you were growing up, I guess I don't know how to put this, but like sort of you had this imposter syndrome, and you sort of were you were always this shy young man, and you were never comfortable with the fact that of being mentioned of all these of how famous of a man your paternal grandfather was, and after all, just being born. Wasn't really anything that you were sort of, I guess, satisfied with or praised for, and it's always been something of a mixed bag and or a double-edged sword, as you mentioned in sort of one of the interviews that you did and one of the articles I read about you. But I mean, when you're talking about like improving and sort of being that artist on that stage and being able to perform sort of your original music and bringing out the originality, I guess, as we're speaking about it, when you look on that sort of aspect of now you see yourself improving as an artist and putting out original content and putting out this authentic performer side of you instead of the expectations of being the similarity of your paternal grandfather, sort of what sort of comes to mind when sort of like you think about that imposter syndrome and then you think about the improvement that you made as an artist, I guess.
Well, the funny thing is I think almost all artists have to suffer through a bit of imposter syndrome. And actually, I've been told that maybe most of us on Earth struggle a little bit with that, no matter what we're doing. So I think it's a very human and a very common thing. And like I said, I just found, and it's helped me as a human being finding what is the purpose in life, how do you become happy and content in life, and having these goals that you can accomplish, and it doesn't have to be fame or wealth, but being able to know that I am a better singer than I was a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and I exponentially get better as I go, and that really has kept me from being down on myself, because I can see the progress. People hear the progress. I've made it. I mean, of course, I still have room to grow, but even just during the pandemic, I saw a new vocal teacher who's passed away now. His name was Robert Edwards, but I got his name through a friend, Douglas Rozier's, another crooner, and this man, just via Zoom, during the pandemic, he helped me, and he helped me put these final touches, and it all tied a lot of my other previous years and teachers that I'd learned a few bits of things here from. And to have made that breakthrough was just, huge for me. And so now, I can listen to recordings of myself, whether it's from a little phone speaker or at a live show in a crowded room. And I can like be proud of what I hear, and that means a lot to me, because I had my, even though I didn't like necessarily being compared to my grandfather, inside me I was also doing that, and I've set a real high bar. As far as I'm concerned, the bar is Sinatra, Crosby, Sammy Davis Jr. These are tough acts to follow, but if you definitely you gotta you can't be singing flat, and you can't be doing a lot of weak kind of you gotta bring your game down together pretty good. Doesn't have to be perfect, but it's got to be good, and you gotta have the confidence behind it.
For sure. And I guess the other important question I want to ask you sort of was, do you feel content in life now, I guess?
I do, but I do struggle with that. I think I was, this is a very personal thing for me. I'm one of those people that was just born a little bit of a malcontent. When I was a kid, I never really felt fully appreciated or heard. And it's part of my nature to always, I don't know that I'll ever be fully content. I have, I, I'm, it's a, I, it's, it sounds like a cliche, but I have a poet's soul. I'm somebody who I love, but you know what? Art comes from the tortured souls, and I may not be like a writer or poet or a painter, but I have something in common with them, and that is that I have that kind of soul that's sensitive. I'm a sensitive nature, so I do struggle with being content. But most people don't really see that. They see a very affable, fun, lively, and that's because that's essentially who I am. And I am happy to be alive. And I don't know that I'm content, but I'm working on it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, speaking of that, I really want to also touch on the fact that now that you've actually like mentioned how like you're sort of you feel content but not fully yet, I guess, when sort of that occurs still, I guess now that it still continues to occur from time to time, but when it does happen and you feel not so content in life and you're having those moments, I guess, what do you do to take yourself out of it, I guess?
Well, I'm of the belief that it helps to acknowledge how you're feeling. Don't bury it. Give it, sometimes you got to give it voice and give it the light. And it's tough to admit, that, you're frustrated, or you're feeling despair or any of those things. But I'm of the belief that acknowledging it and kind of owning it, they call it shadow work, I guess some people call it that. I think that does help a lot. I mean, there's probably things I could be doing, like more exercise and meditation. I do love yoga. I love a hot mountain hot spring, and if I can, go up into the hills, I love nature. And one of the things I love about entertainment, I believe it exists for a reason. We need a distraction sometimes. There's nothing wrong with, distracting yourself, because our minds can dwell too much on the negative. And so I think it's important to enjoy yourself a little bit with your favorite film or TV show. And that's why we have these artists. Or a great album. I listen to vinyl. I have a record collection. I also have old 78s and old 78 players. So yeah, that's one of the things that's I'm proud of being a part of, is that legacy of show business and entertainment. Because even though it's sometimes can be too much, we don't want to binge watch every show that we can, but it also can help us get through the hard times,
For sure. And I guess that you do love traveling, and it's very clear in terms of your social media posts.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite place that you've traveled to so far?
Ooh, well, I used to say Turkey, because I spent my 20th birthday in Turkey, and I was there for 2 months, about 2 months traveling around. This is back in 1992 or 91. And that was like kind of where I grew up a little bit and came of age, on my own in such an exotic place where not everybody spoke English, and I didn't speak a lot of Turkish. But lately I've most recently Peru was like took the new championship. I mean, just it was a place where it wasn't so difficult to like lose the tourist trail, not, and I didn't really go off way into the Amazon or anything, but I mean, I felt like I had the feeling like this is the kind of place where you can have a magical experience. They're a loving, warm people, and even though it as a foreigner, sometimes they they're not always, it can be closed to, because it's a it's a very unique and very special culture. But I still felt like, I loved the Peruvian people and the spirit there and the magic of the place.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we've reached the end of our conversation together, but thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. It's been an absolute pleasure to be able to explore your story and hear all about your grandfather and sort of the life that he lived. It's been such an honor of mine, I guess, to have you on today.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I appreciate what you've put into looking into me and the history and the music and the man being, and that really impressed me. So I appreciate it. It's been my pleasure.
Well, I mean, to those who made it this far into the episode, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Phil Crosby Jr., a jazz performing artist, multi-instrumentalist, band leader, and grandson of late iconic entertainer, Academy Award winner, television producer, radio personality, and businessman Bing Crosby. If you haven't listened to Bing Crosby's interviews, go take a listen to those because those are like absolute gold material. I remember listening to Bing's interview with Barbara Walters, and that one really hit. And I love listening to Larry King's interviews and Barbara Walters, more importantly, because like they are just as genuine and do so much research in terms of in terms of the interviewer that they're interviewing, and they're great personalities as well. And if you want to reach Phil, you can connect with him through his socials. For more info, visit philcrosbyjr.com, where you can learn all about Phil's career and what he's got upcoming. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, feel free to share with friends, family, or on social media, or leave a rating or review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow the show on all social media platforms. I've been your host, Shubhi Kelsang. Thanks for tuning into the show.